Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As we do each week, we have a conversation that includes you about all types of issues, public affairs, public policy, and politics. Tonight, if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to call, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you're on the neighbor islands or listening to the live stream. Midway through the Reagan years, the U.S. entered into the Compact of Free Association with the Federated States of Micronesia. The Compact, or COFA, provides U.S. economic assistance, defense of the Federated States of Micronesia, and other benefits, and that's in exchange for U.S. defense and certain other operating rights in Micronesia, denial of access to Micronesian territory by other nations, and some other agreements. Still, many people don't understand much about the Compact or the Pacific Islander experience in Hawaii. Tonight, we're going to continue our series based on the collection of essays, Value of Hawaii 2, with two contributors, Innocenta Sound Kiku and Kathy Jetnell Kitchener, and UHM student Kat Lebendon, who works with the Palolo Pipeline Project geared to help Pacific Islanders. And of course, you're here too, and we invite you to join the conversation. Thank you all for being here tonight. It's a difficult situation for a lot of you to deal with, and it's very much charged with emotion, which comes through the two poems, the essays, which are actually very long poems, in the book, in The Value of Hawaii 2. And that seems to mirror a lot of what we hear from Pacific Islanders, that living in Hawaii is not a great and joyous experience always, and that it's fraught with a lot of frustration and in some cases, of self-hatred. We want to talk a lot about many of those things with you. All of you have had some experience with it in one way or other. And Kathy, I want to start with you. Mm. And in part because you're the youngest member of this group and in closest to some of those feelings. You came here from the Marshall Islands when you were just a tiny tot and grew up in Hawaii, but it wasn't exactly the best of experiences for you.
First, thank you for having me on the show. Yes, I moved here when I was 6, and I lived here and graduated when I was about 18. And the thing is, I grew up as Marshallese, as a Micronesian, and I didn't really realize that a lot of things that people were saying around me, a lot of things that were happening in headlines, these were all influencing the way I felt about myself and about my culture. And I didn't realize any of that, though, until I moved away to California, where I ran into a friend who had met someone from Hawaii. And this friend of mine in college, she was saying to me, hey, you know, I heard you grew up in Hawaii. And I said, yeah. And she said, but aren't you Micronesian? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm Micronesian. And she said, don't they hate Micronesians out there? And she just said that, like it was this fact. Yeah, and I was completely shocked at the time. But at the same time, I wasn't shocked because in my head I realized, yeah, she's right. A lot of people really hate Micronesians. And that's when I really started to confront all this underlying racism that I grew up with, that I had internalized. And that's when I, you know, started to do a lot of work with myself to realize and kind of to unlearn that racism and to start to really appreciate myself and my culture again.
I'm wondering if we can ask you to read some of your poem that you have in The Value of Hawaii 2, just to sort of make that point.
Yeah, sure. So this is a poem that's a little bit more about climate change, but do you want me to read the whole piece or just
parts of it? You can read whatever parts of it you want about what kind of people.
Okay. So the poem is basically about how I'm sending a package to my friends in the States. And the package has a basket, a Marshallese woven basket, and Marshallese earrings. And so I write, inside the basket, I write this message. Wear these earrings to parties, to your classes and meetings, to the corner store, the grocery store, and while riding the bus. Store jewelry, incense, copper coins, and curling letters like this one in this basket. And when others ask you where you got this, you tell them, they're from the Marshall Islands. Show them where it is on a map. Tell them we are a proud people, toasted dark brown as the carved ribs of a tree stump. Tell them we are descendants of the finest navigators in the world. Tell them our islands were dropped from a basket carried by a giant. Tell them we are the hollow hulls of canoes as fast as the wind slicing through the Pacific Sea. We are wood shavings and drying pandanus leaves and sickly piros at KMMs. Tell them we are shards of broken beer bottles burrowed beneath fine white sand. We are children flinging like rubber bands across a road clogged with chugging cars. Tell them we only have one road. And after all this, you tell them about the water, how we have seen it rising, flooding across our cemeteries, gushing over our sea walls, and crashing against our homes. Tell them what it's like to see the entire ocean level with the land. Tell them we are afraid. Tell them we don't know of the politics or the science, but tell them we see what is in our own backyard. Tell them that some of us are old fishermen who believe that God made us a promise. Tell them some of us are a little bit more skeptical. But most importantly, you tell them that we don't want to leave. We've never wanted to leave. And that we are nothing without our islands.
How did you come to write that?
So I wrote that, like as I said, I was in college, and then after I finished college in California, I moved back to the Marshall Islands, kind of as a way to actually connect with, you know, the roots and that part of my identity that I'd longed
for. Figure out who you are.
Yeah, basically. And it was while out there that I started to really realize how big the ocean is. I mean, you don't really realize it till you're right there. And our island is tiny. I mean, you can see one end of the ocean. You can see the ocean on one side and then turn and the ocean is on the other side of you. It's on both sides of you and it's huge. And it just made me realize how vulnerable we are as a people. And I started to do research on climate change. I started to see all this media and these reports. And it just seemed like no one was talking about, you know, the people who are actually going to lose our home, you know, how we're going to lose an entire history. They're talking about, like, what is our seat going to be in the UN, or where would we relocate to, as if, you know, we would just give up, that there's nothing else we could do, that it's just inevitable. And that's when I decided to write that poem.
I want to talk a little bit with Innocenta now, because she's in a different generation than you are, but you share much of the same emotional frustration, only with you, Innocenta, you have children. And so you've seen some of that replicated in your own family. How did that happen?
Well, my daughter is a teenager now. And, you know, growing up here in Hawaii, she's going through the same thing that Kathy is going through. During her time, unfortunately, we thought we would have learned from all of this, and it appears that we're not learning from it, because our children are still facing the same discrimination and the same hardship that they're facing because of the fact that their parents are living or have a different lifestyle or a cultural practice than everyone else around them. So my daughter is really trying to understand her culture, and at the same time she has to face the reality that in her school and in the neighborhood that she's in, her friends are facing different kinds of singling out because of who they are as Micronesians.
When you came to the United States, you sort of had one foot in your culture, one foot in Western culture, and we're trying to make sense of all of that. What do you think you've been able to do to help your daughter cope with so much of what's coming at her in terms of being singled out, as you put it?
Well, for me, coming to Hawaii, I was culturally shocked by first the surrounding. I thought coming to Hawaii will be, you know, the same as our islands, where you see coconut trees with nuts on it and not worrying about anything else, but friendly people singing with ukulele under the trees and greeting one another as if they're long lost friends and families. But when I arrived at the airport, the first thing I was faced with was the structure, and coming out to head to Comfort Housing, which is where I was living, was really different than what I had expected. And to be the only family in that area at that time, only Micronesian family, I was surrounded by people that never seen us. I was faced with kids that do not know who Micronesians are, let alone Chukis. The communication or conversation we have is really different. The English that I learned back in Chuk is different from the Pidgin that I was experiencing. And so for my daughter, I'm always trying to speak and tell her who are these different people that are around her, and that there is nothing different with her. But the reality is she's still facing that. And so one time she came from school and she shared something that really took me off guard, because I didn't think that in a school environment she would experience such discrimination.
20 years after you.
Right, 20 years after mm-hmm. me. And so what happened was that a teacher just felt frustrated because of her. And I mean, she was frustrated probably because of her work, and take it out on my daughter when she was asking about what's going on. So,
would you read a little bit from the book about, actually your poem is
right.
Read it in its entirety if you would, and you can start from the beginning if you want. Sure.
Okay, so
a little moment to pause to put on other glasses. Okay.
When my daughter was 12 years old, she came home one day from school, upset and confused. She couldn't stop thinking about what her substitute teacher had told her that day. "It's because of you people it makes me frustrated to come to teach." My daughter came home asking me, "What did the teacher mean by you people? Did she mean me as Chukis, as Micronesian, or me as someone from the Kalii area?" I felt so upset for my daughter, thinking how wrong it was for a teacher to say something like this. I know my other Micronesian kids face different kind of discrimination daily in their school and neighborhood. They're not seen as beautiful, talented, smart, and sacred, but rather looked upon as nothing but trouble.
We know this is very emotional for you. That's okay.
My daughter and I had a long talk that day about her experience and what discrimination is. It pained me to think about her carrying this kind of burden on her shoulder. I wanted to paint a different view for the negative things said about being Micronesian. I wanted my daughter to know she's beautiful, wonderful, and special. For she's a part of something much bigger than a tiny island in Micronesia. I wanted her to know she's part of a greater call, and that we learn from our sky, our ocean, our land and environment, and keeps us strong. My daughter is a value and a treasure, so I wrote this poem. I am of Oceania.
Come closer to the mic because we're losing you a little bit. I'll tell you what, I know that it's a little bit tough for you. Want to have a minute?
I'm good.
Okay.
I am of Oceania is written for her.
I am of Oceania. I am of the island. I am of my ancestors. I am of my mother and my father. The next generation of a beloved nation who has hopes for a better tomorrow, promise to multiply and navigate the earth as my maker calls me to steward, that of which he birthed me, the ocean, an island of the Pacific realm.
That's quite a gift you gave your daughter.
This poem makes my daughter very proud and unashamed of who she is. After I wrote this, she began wearing her traditional clothes and not ashamed anymore.
Amazing that a poem from you could have done that. Kat, I want to get you into this conversation because part of what you do as you are studying at right. the university is to be working with the Palolo Pipeline Project and yes. helping Pacific Islanders to negotiate this very confusing and often frustrating place that, as Innocenta right. said a moment ago, she thought was going to welcome her with open arms and, in fact, became a place in which both she and her daughter have felt discrimination.
Right. Thank you, Bethan, for having me in, on the show. You know, it's very upsetting, you know, and just reading, listening to Innocenta read her story and her poem. And this is just one story, you know. And I'm just thinking now, it's like, you know, I can understand if this discrimination, maybe 1940s, 1950s in the South and the continental USA, but this is Hawaii, you know. And for this blatant racism to be aimed at the people of Micronesia, it should have no place anywhere in the world, but I'm saying least of all here. You know, the work I do in the Palolo Pipeline, you know, I work with a lot of Chukis, Marshallese, there's Pohnpeian children, there's Samoan children, there's Tongan children, there's Hawaiian children, there's a great mix. And just sitting here listening to Kathy and listening to Innocenta, and, you know, what's just coming in my mind is, I wonder if melting pot is really a good word or not. And, you know, we think, we take pride, right? Oh, Hawaii or even America is a melting pot, the land of opportunity. And that really hasn't been the reality for a lot of immigrants from, you know, I can only speak for the Pacific region because this is where I'm from as well. Because in a melting pot, I think indigenous people begin to lose their identity, right? It begins with their language. And once they lose their language, they begin to lose their culture because a lot of their culture is hidden in the language. You know, there's a lot in their language that there's no word in English to describe, but it's understood amongst their people. So what I do when I work with the children in the Palolo Pipeline and is, you know, and they're children. They just play, you know, but they incur racist remarks. And, you know, it's bad as adults to hear somebody calling you some kind of name, derogatory name about your race and stuff. Can you imagine for a child who has no idea? You know, so I try to tell them stories. You know, I'm a storyteller, not a fibber, but I'm a storyteller. And I try to tell them stories about their culture. And I'm still learning a lot about their culture, you know, their history. I want them to take pride in their heritage versus, you know, being more attracted to pop culture, which, you know, it's anything goes in pop culture. And
the impulse to assimilate.
And the impulse to assimilate, you know. And I see these kids just, and like Kathy and both Innocenta talked about, they're ashamed of who they are. And why should, you know, why should they, you know, that's very upsetting. Why should they be ashamed of, they have no control of who they are.
Tonight, if you're just joining us, we're talking about what does it look like to live as, or feel like to live as a Pacific Islander in Hawaii. How do you see Hawaii through Pacific Islanders' eyes? And we're basing part of our conversation on two essays, really long poems, one by Innocenta Saunkiku, the other by Kathy Jetnell Kitchener, in the book The Value of Hawaii 2, part of our series at looking at some of the issues that this book brings up that perhaps the other one didn't in exactly these same types of ways. And we want to hear from you, too. What do you think is our responsibility here in Hawaii to those who come from Micronesia? Do you even spend any time thinking about the Compact of Free Association? What do you think when you see a Micronesian woman walking across the street? Want to talk to you. 941-3689 is our number. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu. And from the neighbor islands or any place else that you may be listening to the live stream, 1-877, then the 941-3689. Kat, as you have seen these children, and you know, kids are kids, and right. they can be incredibly cruel with each other. They Absolutely. Can also be incredibly tender with each right. other. How do you help them through some of those stories to begin to feel that who they are is wonderful? Because, I mean, we say that to children in general, and that mm-hmm. sort of seems to be the path thing is, oh, everybody should be loved for who and what he or she is, and right. just be yourself and all those things. And it seems to be, in some cases, just more rhetoric than actual right. ways of being.
You know, being that we are in Hawaii, one of the most popular stories I like to tell them is the story of Master Navigator Papamau, right? And the gift that he gave the Hawaiian people. And especially with all this publicity, this mega media with the worldwide voyage, you know, that's part of Papamau's legacy, you know? And so I know I got the attention of maybe three kids, you know, and I'm thinking, and if I get one to pay attention, that's plenty enough, right? And then they continue. But they take pride, you know, when we take them down to the dock and they, you know, get their hands on the canoe and they can help with the lashing or whatever way they participate in dry dock. It's like it's almost second nature for them, you know, and they just get in, they love it.
And you're teaching them in a very kinesthetic way, which is
right.
a good thing for some children, too.
It's good for them. I mean, when we do the academic, the paperwork, and, you know, when they have to write, you know, it's like you kind of lose them. And I think that's the case with most children. You know, the reading and writing, they really don't care for. But the hands-on, they absolutely love. And when are we going back down? When are we going back down? And so the story of Papamau is enormous. And I just try to, you know, hone this story into them because it's huge. What he's done for Hawaii is huge. You know, when no one else wanted to help Hawaii, Papamau stepped in and, you know, went against his own clan, you know, severed ties with a lot of his own family because he passed on to Hawaii a secret. You know, he came from a society of navigators, were kind of like a secret society, and he was not supposed to pass a lot of knowledge on to outside of that clan, and he did. And if you think about it, five of Hawaii's navigators, five of Hawaii's master navigators, you know, Nainoa Thompson, Bruce Blankenfill, Chad Babayan, Shorty Bertelman, Uncle Chad Onohi, these are five master navigators. And get this, Beth, they carry Micronesian titles. Their title to who they are as master navigators is Po. And Po is a Micronesian name. And, you know, I think I just don't like that name, Micronesian, because Micronesian is a region. It's not a people. I mean, I'm Polynesian, right? And if somebody just said, talk about all those Polynesians, they don't address us as Polynesians all the time like you hear about Micronesians. And every time I hear something about Micronesians, it's always a negative towards it. So so that's huge. So I like telling the navigating stories. You know, I'm a crew member myself, so I like relating all of that to them because the ocean connects us.
Which is one of the reasons why we start talking about Oceania as right. opposed to this place or only that place, right. which is right. individually part of but not collectively known as Oceania. Right. We have a lot of calls that are starting to come in. If okay. you don't want to join us, do it now. 941-3689. That's the number from Oahu, 941-3689. And if you're calling us from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream and want to participate, glad to have you. 941-3689 with the 877 in front of it gets you to us toll free. Tonight we're talking about what does Hawaii look like through Micronesian eyes. Going first off to now to Jody calling us from Kula. Okay, Shauna calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Shauna. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. I wanted to thank you for this program. I have not heard this kind of expression from Micronesians, and I think that what you've been presenting tonight really shows the complexity of the issues for these people coming to what should seem to be a familiar culture but isn't. And I just wanted to thank both of you, all three of your guests, for their vulnerability and the way they're sharing from their heart. It's really quite a moving and important program tonight. Thank you very much.
Shauna, thank you very much for the kind words. Going now to Vince calling us from Waianae. Aloha,
Vince. Hi, aloha. Let me turn my radio down there.
Thank you. Before I even had to ask you, we really appreciate that so we can hear you and not an echo.
Yes. I was just calling to say that, you know, in our community, in the Waianae community, Micronesians started to show up about maybe 10, 12 years ago. And they're the new kids on the block. And, you know, they got prejudiced just because of being the new kids on the block. We did 10 years of work in our local Waianae intermediate school. And through the consultation with the teachers, we addressed, you know, the background, the history of why Micronesians, especially from Bikini and Eniwetok, why they were here in Hawaii, what the United States had done to them. And through this workshop, the Aipuaku workshop that we ran in our garden at the school, we were able to give students, our local students, background as to why these families, why they were here. And therefore, the teachers were saying that a lot more empathy was generated.
That word empathy is it, because, you know, sympathy is one thing, but to really feel from the depths of one's soul that same kind of experience is entirely different. How much better did it make the situation?
Well, you know, according to the teachers, I can give some kind of anecdotes, like, because most of the Micronesian students that we had did not speak English well, and they were very hands-on bunch, because we were a hands-on workshop, they found a place where they could thrive.
Similar to what Kat just said a moment ago.
What's that?
I said similar to what Kat was sharing a moment ago, that to be able to get the kids, you've got to give them something to do and not just tell them how they should feel.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then for the fellow students to see that, oh, look at so-and-so. Wow, they know how to do this. They know how to do this and this really well, you know. And because in our workshop, we built classroom community. So there was that immediate effect. And then the feedback from teachers was that the discussions that we had and the information that was given about what happened in Bikini, and we didn't spare our seventh graders. You know, we showed them pictures of kids that played with radioactive fallout, and they had the statistics about how much cancer and disease, and pictures of youth their age who were, you know, these wonderful young people that got afflicted with radioactivity, with poison by radioactivity, and what happened to them.
How did the kids react?
That sobered the children, the seventh graders, and gave them a chance to feel empathetic for their fellow students.
But Vince, how did they react when they saw that? You said that you didn't spare them any of the truly unfortunate and rather gory details. How did they react to that?
You know, they were stunned. They were stunned. You know, because it was pictures of kids their age, and we had photos of the Bikini community as they were leaving their island and giving it over to the United States for temporary use, and pictures of these strong, wonderful, healthy people, and then, you know, pictures 20 years later, and pictures of survivors of the radioactive fallout. So they were stunned, and they were angry, some of them.
Some of your students were stunned and angry?
Yes.
And then what happened? How did you diffuse that, or did you feel that wasn't necessary?
Well, you know, some of the things we talked about then was that if, you know, the question came up, well, what about, you know, parents and grandparents who would have been, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, you know, your grandparents would have been around, you know, why didn't they do anything about this? How could such atrocities be done to people? And basically all of that was kept secret until you know, much later in history.
And, you know, that's often the question that many young people will ask of their parents and their grandparents when they learn of what has happened, not just with Bikini, but in many other events through history. Thanks so much for calling. We really appreciate hearing from you. If you'd like to join the conversation tonight, we're talking about what is the experience of a Pacific Islander in Hawaii? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking to two of the contributors to the Value of Hawaii 2, Innocenta San Kiku is here, also Kathy Jetnell Kitchener, and also with our panel this evening, Kat Lobandon, who works with the Palolo Pipeline Project, which is geared to helping Pacific Islanders negotiate their way through an often frustrating and confusing structure. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you'd like to join us tonight on Town Square. Going to Don, calling us from Aiea. Aloha, Don.
Welcome. Hi, how are you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on the situation here. Being that it's an American thing, I think, that a lot of immigrants come throughout history and, you know, if they persevere and eventually, you know, get educated, as some say, and a lot of them come and then strive here. But being also Filipino, I was prejudiced against also. And we see that. I have oftentimes even said some things about my Polynesian, and that, to me, that's being ignorant, and I have been, so just commenting on that.
But you are certainly big enough to call the show and tell us all about it, so we will take it that you have reformed yourself?
Trying to. You know,
all right, Don. Thanks so much.
Day.
Thanks so much. Well, hopefully that's where we all are until we don't have that opportunity anymore. Thanks so much for your call. If you'd like to join us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. How do you view Micronesians in our community? Do you look at them as separate, other? What do you think? We want to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. There was an incident not too long ago, and it was on the ugly side, Kat. And it was something that seemed to be, on one hand, sort of, you know, an offhand, not so nice remark that was made on a radio station. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you turned it into an opportunity for learning.
Right. I think it was maybe about 2 months ago, early in the morning, one of the radio stations, the DJ just made one of the worst jokes I've ever heard about Micronesians. And it had to do with babies. And I just thought it was just truly tasteless. It bothered me all day. And if I may, this is the joke when something like this. Why aren't Micronesians very attractive or something like, or beautiful? And the punchline was because birth defects are terminated before birth. And although the joke doesn't make sense, you know, the thing that immediately came into my mind was, you know, the jelly babies and the children, the babies that are affected by the nuclear radiation and everything that was happening there. And, you know, my conscience just wouldn't leave me alone that day. So I started a petition. I was looking for about 100 signatures, you know. And the last I checked, maybe it was over a month ago, we were at over 2,500 signatures. Anyway, we were demanding an apology from the radio station, and they need to educate their DJs to stop telling these kind of sick jokes, because that's what it is sick, you know. It's hurtful. It's actually not even a joke. It's bullying, you know. And then, so we were invited on the show to one of their radio stations to just do like an educational thing. And so in the end, we were received very well. We had a great talk with one of the radio hosts. And
were they surprised when you came in as well-spoken as you are and calm and quiet about the whole thing and just laid it out?
Right. My fellow panelist was Dr. Sheldon Ricklin and also JoJo Peters. And, you know, well-educated men and you know, it was just an educational process. The DJ was blown away. He said never in his 20 years, and this he was celebrating his 20 years, has he ever had a panel like this. And he invited us back sometime. So, you know, we're going to try to cash that check in someday soon. But it was, we had a good reception there. The radio, the station manager, I mean, just extended if we needed any help, publicity for fundraising or anything coming, you know, they were, like you said earlier, you know, we got some good lemonade out of some pretty sour lemons. But yeah, it's really unfortunate what happened, but our whole goal was to turn it around. You know, we didn't want to go in hostile and angry and anything that...
Well, that wouldn't have served you.
No, and I didn't want to give in to the stereotype.
We've got callers on the line who all want to talk to you, so we're going to go back to them for a moment. To Mike calling us from Kaka'ako. Aloha, Mike. Thanks for your patience. Welcome to Town Square.
No, thank you for having this conversation. I was a truck driver for years, so I got to experience a lot of the island. And I seen the racism because I worked with Micronesians too, and I heard it from both sides. And what I found out was it's a lack of education, of knowledge of why they're here. And they're just seen as, you know, someone who's here to take from them who already have so little. Yes. And if the government would sell, you know, tell people why they're coming or why they're here and let that people know more, I think it wouldn't be such tension.
So, I mean, you'd really never heard the expression, the compact of free association?
No.
So that was never, ever part of the conversation. I mean, this is in part making, I think, your point that there really isn't an understanding about why Micronesians are in Hawaii or in the United States and what the responsibilities are on both sides, what the benefits, privileges, and how that has changed over time since the initial compact. So what about now? How do you feel about Micronesians now, having seen sort of both sides of it?
Well, I've never had a problem. I'm mixed myself and black and white, and I've experienced this racism myself on multiple occasions in my personal life and for work. That's why I also noticed it happening to the Micronesians, and I wanted to know why. And I've talked to a lot of locals because I look Hawaiian, and I talked to a lot of them to find out why, and the reason was that they just didn't know. They were seen in this capacity of taking from what little they already couldn't get. You know, they lost their island, they lost their right to choose their own destiny and such, and they see these as just more people doing the same to them. And, you know what I mean?
And looked at as being interlopers. Mike, thanks very much for your call. Thanks for sharing your experience. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Do you understand what the Compact of Free Association means? Do you even think about that as you see Micronesians in our community? We want to hear from you. 941-3689 if you are on Oahu, call that number. And if you're calling us from the neighbor islands or listening to the live stream, 877-941-3689. Going to Ray calling us from Kapolei. Aloha, Ray. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. An earlier caller made reference to it's not really Micronesia. It should be pointed out there's the Marshall Islands, Chuuk, Ponape, Kusrae, Yap, Belau. The United States, unlike New Zealand and Australia, how they handle their trusteeships, the United States just exhibited benign neglect and threw in surplus food to keep people quiet.
And do you speak from some experience in any of this?
Yes, I've had the good fortune to work
Where were you working?
Well, the Marshall Islands, Majuro, Colonia, Yap, and visits to Ponape and Belau.
And what do you think now that obviously you're here in Hawaii and you've seen some of the ways in which Micronesians have been characterized in Hawaii and some of the discussions about, well, you know, should the responsibility of the United States change? Should the benefits change? All of that, as we've had them, you know, within our state and certainly a national conversation, albeit much smaller. How do you feel when you hear this?
Sick.
Tell me why.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I know this is a very deeply emotional issue, and I'm watching Innocenta get very misty as she's listening to you. Thank you very much for calling, Ray. Aloha. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. This is a deeply emotional issue for those people who know and perhaps watch other people not knowing. Kathy, you've been sitting there kind of quiet over all this, listening to some of our callers and some of the conversation. Given your generation, what do you think needs to be done that hasn't really taken hold yet, that seemingly hasn't been enough? Because we heard what Innocenta said. She's got a daughter who's a teenager now. Mm-hmm. You are not a teenager. I mean, you're much older than a teenager. But you can look back and remember those years. What needs to change now so that she doesn't go through some of the same things that you went through when you were in college and in your post-college years?
I'm thinking right now, I'm sitting here and I'm just remembering all these little things from high school, you know.
And we're passing a lot of Kleenex around this table.
Yeah. Just wondering, you know, like, why, how come these girls get to do this and I don't get to do this? And how come, you know, all these little things. And I think for me, the kinds of things I wish could happen sooner rather than later are programs for our kids that reinforce our identity and reinforce our histories and tells us that we're beautiful. And I think these conversations are so important. I'm so glad it's happening now, you know, and I think this is a huge step, because when I was growing up, nobody was talking about it. Mm-hmm. Racism was this hush-hush thing that nobody talked about and everyone kind of kept quiet about and no one wanted to bring it up. And now that it's coming up, I'm so glad, because I think this is a good pathway. And what I'd like to see are just more programs for kids, basically. You know, I know that Kat was saying a lot of kids just like to be, you know,
hands-on,
and I totally agree with that. But I also taught poetry workshops with a lot of Micronesian students, and I loved hearing their stories. You know, they had that space. They were with another Micronesian who was able to tell them, hey, you can talk about these things. You can talk about your home life, and you can write about it, and you can tell your story the way you see things. And that was amazing. They were able to express these emotions and express these things that, you know, they usually aren't allowed to talk about, and that no one wants to listen to. You know, kids are talking about their uncle who had to fly out here to get new body parts, you know, basically because we don't have good hospitals back at home. And the way they're processing these things is amazing. And to see it through poetry, through storytelling, it's beautiful. And I'd love to see that more. You know, I'd love to see our communities encouraged to express themselves in different ways, our kids to, you know, basically to have more resources at their hands. I'd like to see our churches, our churches to work together, you know, so that there's less of these divisive lines between us, and also our consulates. Our consulates are all here, and they usually help us with paperwork and stuff. But I'd love to see our consulates do more activities with kids, too, mm-hmm. you know, to let them know, hey, I know it's a scary, big place. Hawaii can be scary, but there are plenty of people here who can help you, and there are plenty of people here who are like you, and it's okay to be scared, you know, stuff like that. That's what I'd like to see.
And maybe a little more education with some teachers so that we don't hear some of the messages that Innocenta's daughter heard not too long ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. I was growing up with those kinds of things all the time. Like, you're pretty for a Micronesian. Oh, you're kind of smart for a Micronesian, you know, and I just internalized that. And I'd love it if a lot more adults could learn about our history.
And if we had put any other, you know, group into that space, take out Micronesian, put in something else, there'd be lots of people squawking.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, we have some people who want to talk to all of you on the line. I promise we'll get everybody through as we can. Mimi calling us from Waipahu. Aloha, Mimi. Thanks for your patience. Welcome to Town
Hi.
Square.
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Okay, yes. My name is Mimi. I'm Waipahu. And what it is I have a Micronesian neighbor, right? And she says they have this system where, you know, you can adopt and have your own sister. Hmm. So she asked me if I'd be her sister, and I'm actually as old as her mom. But I said, sure, you know, I'll be your sister. And and she started asking me, how come it's not right for cousins to marry each other? And I told her it's because, you know, there's known deformities that come out, and there's a lot of resources that cost money, and just the deformities, you know, cost the mom to pay attention a lot, so they don't want it. And she said she didn't know who her true cousins were. She knew who her mother, her mom and dad, her brothers and sisters and stuff like that, but her mom would tell her to call this person her auntie, but she doesn't know if that's her blood auntie. So I told her, well, then how are you going to know if your daughter is going to marry her first cousin, you know? So I just feel there's something going on there that the federal government should step in, because I know the federal government before was giving them money because of the, you know, the radiation they were practicing bombing, A-bombs. But we're not the only ones. The French did it, too. That's another issue. But the federal government should step in and do some kind of study, or maybe give money to the state to try and track who is really blood-related, you know?
All right, because Mimi, we'll take that one up. I mean, is there anything to what Mimi says about people not knowing their genealogy? I mean, you all seem to know very clearly who's who and what's
in your
family.
This is the first I've heard about that.
Right. It is the first time. And plus, you know, for the Chukis community, we are all mothers and fathers to our children. There is, in our language, there is no word for aunties and uncles. They're all mamas and papas. Therefore, they are accountable to the children, regardless who they are, whether they're blood-related or not. The fact that you are related to that child, you are a mama to that child, and you are a papa to that child, and you can discipline them and teach them if they need to. Or I don't understand about what she was talking about.
No, but your point, though, the fact that you have a group of adults responsible for a group of children, regardless of whose biological children they may be, you know, of the people in the group, you know, some of that also is here, too. I mean, there are lots of adults now who will tell you, oh, boy, yeah, everybody in our street, it was, boy, if they saw you out after dark or something happened, they'd say, you, Kozlovich kids, in the house, your mom's calling for you. Something right. Where there was responsibility, but not necessarily at the level at which you're talking about. It's really, truly, I mean, I hate to be cliche about this, but truly taking a village in the way you regard child rearing.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We had a quick question about a podcast. Yes, the show will be podcast and it will be uploaded a little later this evening. So if you've missed the first part of it and you want to hear some more, you can just give it a little time this evening and you should be able to access it tomorrow. If you want to talk to us tonight, however, you still have a little time, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What do you see as the responsibility of the United States to Micronesians, and how do you view Micronesians in our community? We've gotten a lot of response about what it should be or what people have experienced in terms of discrimination, talking with our panelists tonight about their experiences and trying to help a younger generation to have a better experience and to feel the beauty and the attachment and the identity of their own culture. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Kathy, you were making reference to some things that, frankly, aren't very expensive to do, to have kids be able to have workshops for poetry and writing. Mm-hmm. But it does need somebody who is sensitive enough to be able to do it and sees that as a worthwhile thing to do. You've taught some of those classes. Mm-hmm. Are there enough people who can do that, who can, you know, relate to the kids and make them feel that who they are is worthy?
Well, actually, that's one thing. I personally would really like to challenge the Micronesians who are my age, you know, 20s and older, who are kind of young enough to relate to these kids, but old enough to take on leadership roles. I want to challenge the new generation of Micronesians to start stepping up to become leaders in our community, you know, to speak out when they hear something is wrong, to not perpetuate the kind of racism we felt against other groups. To start leading our kids and, you know, whatever skill you might have, it doesn't have to be poetry and writing. It can be other things. If it's drawing, if it's computer, you know, programming or anything like that, even just taking the time to spend more time with the kids around your community. I just think that we can take a little bit more responsibility. This new generation, we need to take a little bit more responsibility with the younger generation.
All right, we've got more callers on the line. We're going to go off to Grace calling us from Kapalama. Aloha, Grace. Thank you for your patience.
Aloha, Town Square. How are you?
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to take a moment to just give a shout out to both Kathy and Eno. I do have to disclose that I know them both personally, and I just really want to honor their leadership and the gifts that they give to community every day. I feel like I've learned so much from them, particularly Eno, in having the opportunity to work with her in the back of Kukuakulihi Valley in the farm at Huluaina there. And it's there on the land that I feel like what she showed me was this profound connection and solidarity of working together and creating family out of folks who are travelers and folks who are trying to find home in a new place. And so I just wanted to mahalo, you know, for that and the way that she has shown me like an expansive way of how to be a mother.
Well, Grace, and I got to tell you, there aren't many dry eyes around this table. And I want to thank you so much for calling on behalf of some who are currently engaged in getting a Kleenex. Thanks so very much for calling.
Thank you.
As you, all three of you, look out in the community, and Kathy has made some references to what she thinks should happen and calling on the community itself to look at the kids and really be available to them in a way, is there something that you see that would be particularly beneficial that, you know, while we're painting with these big paintbrushes, mm-hmm. but more narrowly defined where someone could start? Kat?
For me, I would encourage the older generation, like the elderly, while they're still around, to help ground the youth and the children in their cultural roots, right? Because for Pacific Islanders to see where we're going, we need to look at where we came from. And so I would love to see, you know, Kathy brought up those programs, and, you know, I'm behind her 1,000%. I would love to see, like, the elder, the different communities, whether the Chukis, the Marshallese, all the different groups in Micronesia, to develop their own programs, like cultural, and have a cultural night and something where, you know, they just perpetuate the richness of their culture. These people have been around for a long time, a long, long time, you know, thousands and thousands of years. And so I think we can ground them in their cultural roots and put the right pride in them, in their heritage. You know, it doesn't matter what anybody says. They know who they are regardless.
All right. We'll get a few more of our callers in. A lot of people want to talk to you. Calling now from Wailuku, we've got Mary on the line. Aloha, Mary. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, hi. Thank you so very much for turning a very painful experience to a learning opportunity. I'd suggest that there be more op-ed pieces, and maybe other radio stations can do something as well. There are things happening within the Pacific Islander community that I think requires the education of the prosecutors, the police, the judges, the social workers. And I belong to an ethnic community myself, and I know we have had problems in the past, but our current problems are not as pronounced as those of the Pacific Islanders. So I thank you so very much. Please leave your contact info, because some of your listeners have something to share about what we can do, small steps and big steps.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mary. I'll give you our Facebook page. It's Hawaii Conversation. Or if you want to find mine, it's just under my name, Beth Ann Kozlovich. If you have contact information or anything you'd like us to share, post it there, and we'll be really happy to send it along. Or if you'd like to have email, want to be a little bit more private, you can do that at talkback, all one word, talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Thanks so much for the call. All right, we're coming down to last part of the hour. If we get some more callers who are dying to get in, somebody just hung up. Sorry about that. Call us back. We'll put you through. But there, you hear these calls from various people saying, can we do something more? We need to reach out to ourselves. Has that not happened as much as perhaps it should have? I mean, one would have thought that would be maybe a natural thing to do when you're here and having an experience, trying to make it a little easier for someone else who is coming and preventing certainly children from having those experiences. But there seems to be the subtle suggestion that maybe the Micronesian community hasn't reached out to itself as much and out to the greater community as much. Would you agree with that or no?
From my own personal experience, what I've observed is, you know, there's been a lot of fear. And one of the saddest things that I heard during the whole petition was I talked to a friend of mine who was Chukis, and I talked about the petition and stuff. And they, you know, what I found very hurtful was they said, oh, yeah, we always hear those kind of jokes, you know. So I think a lot in the community have become numb, you know, and they think maybe, it's, you know, it's like an uphill battle, you know, who's going to do this. But, you know, you got people like Kathy, you got Innocenta, you know, JoJo Peters, Dr. Sheldon Ricklin. There's, you know, there's leaders. And I think we just need to, I think they need more airtime, you know.
Thank you, Kat. And I believe that a lot of people don't realize that this group of Micronesians or Islanders, Chuuk, Ponpe, Kosrae, Yap, Marshall, Palau, all the groups, they have their own groups within their own islands, and they do meet and they do share. I mean, they do their own thing within their own group, but not so much with each other. I mean, that's, I think All Mike Basketball and All Mike Volleyball Tournament is one of the few events that we come together as one. But people need to understand that within this group of islands, they have their own activity that they do, because community gathering is really the strength of all of these islands. And Chukis alone or Ponapen alone or Marshallese alone are strong with their own group. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that people need to know that there are gatherings and things happening that they do for themselves.
And maybe they need to find out more about all those. Mm-hmm. We're coming down to the last couple of minutes. I want to ask you very briefly, if there is one thing that all of you know that you think the rest of us really need to pay attention to right now, what would it be? Innocent, I'll start with you.
Well, I think that one thing I would like everyone to remember is that we all are breathing and feeling the same blow of wind. And as Pacific Islanders, we're on the same sail. It's not so much about the wind that is blowing our sail or our canoe. It's how we set that sails, and everyone can make a difference and change.
Kat? For me, we're Oceania, the people of Micronesia are cousins to Hawaii and everywhere else in the region, and I think they belong here, and they shouldn't have a problem being here.
And that, so, I mean, taking from what you just said, that everybody should understand that there's a reason for those from Micronesia.
Just educate yourself. I mean, people just need to educate themselves why they are here. You know, and many are not by choice. But while they are here, we need to, if we are the Aloha State, then, you know, let's put our money where our mouth is.
And show a little.
Exactly.
Kathy, I'll let you have the final word. As the youngest member of this group and who has felt it most keenly most recently.
I just want other kids to know that, you know, our cultures are beautiful, our islands are beautiful, our families are beautiful, and I want them to be proud of where they are from and, you know, of who they are. And I don't want them to internalize all of this hatred. Mm-hmm. So that's what I want.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us tonight and all of you who called in or tried to. We're very glad to have you. But a special thanks to Kathy Jetnil Kitchener and to Innocenta San Kiku and to Kat Levandon for being here. I appreciate all of you for what you had to say. And again, we'll have the podcast up for you a little later this evening in case you missed any of the show. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll see you tomorrow morning for a 4th of July version of The Conversation. Have a good evening. Aloha.